Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Death of Death, where we proclaim Christ's victory over sin, death, and everything else. I'm your host, Nick Stewart. Really excited about today's show because this is an episode I've been wanting to do since before I even launched the podcast. First, let me say, I am a little surprised by how many people had a reaction to just the title of last week's episode, asking me if I had become a dispensationalist. Not sure if anyone actually listened to the episode, but just for the sake of clarity, no, I am not a dispensationalist. It was just a few observations about the world around me in kind of a funny way to position the show. On to a quick piece of business. There was a new 5-star review on Apple Podcast written by a user named Ben Skizzle. I always hate trying to guess who people are by their Apple username because I'm either not realizing who it really was or I'm crediting someone who it wasn't. Either way, it's kind of a lose if I'm wrong, but if I were a gambling man, I'd say that was Ben Skiles, and I'm sorry if I'm wrong about that, but that comment about me once being a fair-haired lad gave you away, Ben, so even if you're not Ben Skiles, I think everyone should know that I miss Ben Skiles. So if you're listening, Ben, I love you. And to all the listeners, if you'd like to head over to Apple Podcast and leave the show a 5-star review, it's totally free and easy for you to do, and it helps the show a lot. So it helps us come up higher in the search results. So thanks again, Ben. You're at least Ben. I just don't know if you're Ben Skiles, so thank you. I need to address something else before we go any further. So there's a thing going on, and I have said over and over again that I don't want to talk about this thing on the show anymore, but week after week, I violate that, and I talk about it anyway. So without naming what it is, I'm reiterating that I don't want to talk about it. I mentioned last week that Chris Jameson made a post about the show because he's listening from the beginning, and it reminded me that the show used to be all about Christ's victory and the resulting optimism of that truth, and it showed me how far off course the show has drifted in that respect. In light of, you know, the thing going on around us that I'm not allowed to talk about, it was really hard to maintain that overt optimism. And I say overt optimism because I'm still very optimistic. Jesus is still on the throne. Sin and death have still been defeated. It's just hard not to talk about things that make me angry. And when I do that, it kind of brings down the tone of the show. So I'm reorienting the show back onto its proper theme and the original premise, although I probably won't be able to stop talking about, you know, the thing altogether. I'm only going to refer to it in light of Christ's victory and his lordship and God's sovereign control of all things. But for a while, I'm going to steer clear of, you know, the thing. Speaking of, that was actually the topic of a recent Patreon-exclusive episode I did for The Elect, which is what I call my patron supporters, and I'm going to play a clip of that episode at the end of this show so you can see what you're missing if you're not a Patreon supporter. Another reason why it's necessary for the good of the show that I stop talking about, you know, the thing, is because this show is usually an overflow of everything I'm taking in. What I'm reading, what I'm watching and listening to, I fill my cup with those things and I pour out the contents of that cup into this show. And this week I was struggling to find anything to talk about that didn't relate to, you know, the thing. I realized I was utterly preoccupied with, you know, the thing and the things that relate to, you know. So I had to pick a topic almost completely at random in order to get us off of that subject and reorient my mind onto more positive things. I've been interested in this for a few years now, and I always wanted to talk about it on the show. I just never knew when a good time would be. So there's no better way to learn something than to talk about it on this podcast, because I really have to kind of, you know, learn stuff about it in order to talk about it here. So today the topic is presuppositional apologetics. There, I think the best way to start off is explaining that there are basically three approaches to apologetics. There's you could probably come up with more than that, but I would say there's three main ways of doing it. There's classical apologetics, evidential apologetics, otherwise known as evidentialism, and presuppositional apologetics, otherwise known as presuppositionalism or presupp. Classical, evidential, presuppositional. I am not personally someone who considers these three approaches to be mutually exclusive. I think there's a time and a place for all of them. However, I think presuppositionalism is the best apologetic method, and the other two are good supplements to add on top of it. So I'll do my best to get into how they all work, but I'm actually hoping to revisit this topic frequently as I add to my own knowledge of it, and, you know, I want to pour that knowledge out to others. So I would say evidentialism is almost useless when it comes to the bare bones of winning a soul for Jesus, but it could serve to break down some of the defenses people put up. So I would not say it's entirely useless. I would just say for the exact purpose, it could be a lead-in to an evangelistic encounter, maybe, but I would say it really can only exist as a supplement for reasons I'm going to get into later, but suffice it to say that, like, proving to someone that evolution doesn't exist is not going to win a soul to Christ, but that's kind of how it's conducted a lot of the time. So we all know the main verse used for apologetics: always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. Apologia means a defense of the faith. So we are exhorted in that, like, that verse is used to exhort us constantly when doing apologetics, but often we leave out the beginning of that verse, 1 Peter 3:15, but in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense. Presuppositionalism holds that as the basis for apologetics. So we are going to argue from a standpoint that honors Christ as holy. We are not going to argue for some vague monotheistic being, and we're not going to argue against evolution exclusively, because that is not honoring Christ as holy necessarily. That is just proving, you know, a very small point of something related to Christianity. So presuppositionalism defies the idea that we're neutral when it comes to how we think and reason. Classical apologetics kind of uses reason and all these things that we take for granted to argue for Christianity, and that's totally fine, but it was a lot more useful back when everyone could agree on stuff like that. And where we find ourselves today is in a world where there is no consensus on absolute truth or absolute morality, logic, or reason, or any of that. So people claim not to believe in those things. Some people claim not to believe in those things. Now, that's not exactly true, and I think you'll see why momentarily, but it's enough that people think it's true. So I hope this makes sense. People think that they don't believe in absolute truth. So using truth claims with people who claim that when you're trying to share about Jesus is more difficult. Classical apologetics worked better when everyone was dealing with more or less the same tools when it came to argumentation and reason. And an important part of presuppositionalism is that it's not enough to believe what people say about themselves. That's what Jeff Durbin says. So someone might tell you that they don't believe in absolute truth or they don't believe in morality. It's not enough to take that at face value and believe that's true. We need to believe what God actually says about them. So Romans 1 is important for this conversation. I'm going to read Romans 1, 18 through 23. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. So the Bible says that all people believe in God. Verse 21 says they knew God, but it says they didn't honor him. Verse 18 says they suppressed the truth in unrighteousness. And verses 21 and 22 say that their hearts were darkened and they became fools. So any type of argument coming from a perspective of unbelief isn't really coming from a perspective of unbelief. They believe, even if they're so deceived that they think they don't believe, but their rejection of God has darkened their hearts and made them fools, so they think they don't believe. So I hope that makes sense. It's not as simple as they don't believe. They believe, and their suppression of the truth is what leads them to hold the positions that they hold. The problem is their hearts may be so darkened that they don't realize this. So their suppression of the things they know to be true is what leads to their unbelief. The problem of induction is when we use our past experience to claim knowledge of something. So every time I've ever drunk coffee, I've enjoyed it. Therefore, I know next time I take a sip of coffee, I'm going to enjoy it. Every time I've opened my mouth to talk, words have come out. So I know as I try to tell you this, words will come out of my mouth. This is basically where the scientific method comes from, where you can observe and repeat something. You drop a fork in midair, it's going to fall to the ground every single time. You can observe it, you can repeat it over and over and over again, but you can only observe and repeat something in an ordered universe. There's absolutely no grounds for science or logic if this was not true. It wouldn't matter what we were able to observe from astronomy or biology or anything, really. If we didn't know, it would still be true 5 minutes from now. We know that the things we've observed are trustworthy because an omnipotent God is holding all things together. The unbeliever has no such ground for those types of truth claims, so yet they act as if it's true, further demonstrating that they believe and are suppressing the truth and unrighteousness. C.S. Lewis once said, "I don't believe in the sun because I can see it. I believe in the sun because by it I see everything else." So the fundamental question presuppositionalism gets at is not how can we know certain things, it's how can we know anything if it wasn't for God. Epistemology is the theory of knowledge, so that's how we know things. Mark Maron had a great joke in his new stand-up special where he said if you made a list of everything you know in one column, and then in another column you wrote down how you know that thing, most of that second column would probably just say, "Some guy told me." And he's not entirely wrong. It's a good epistemological joke. It gets after the fundamental question of epistemology: how do we know things? We can know things by reason and logic and observation, those real, tangible, like put them in my hands and feel them type things, but who says we can trust our reason and observation? What if I just think I'm sitting at my kitchen table recording a podcast right now? What if I'm actually like in a mental institution staring into a mirror telling myself I'm a pretty girl? So like we try to do in presuppositional apologetics is show the unbeliever that they can't say or prove anything for certain without borrowing from the Christian worldview, which says that the universe is ordered. You have no basis to say there is no God if you can't even know that you're not in a mental institution right now, to like go with the earlier example. What if there is no God right now, but in 5 minutes there will be a God? By what standard do you say there is no God and never will be? In order to prove anything from a perspective of unbelief, you have to presuppose, presuppositionalism. You have to presuppose an ordered universe with predictable reason and truths in order to make any kind of argument at all. So an unbeliever who is making any type of argument, no matter what he's arguing for, is presupposing things from the Christian worldview to make their point. In Christianity, we have good reason to presuppose those things because we believe God has ordered the universe and he's sovereign and he's in control. In presuppositionalism, we have what they call a revelational epistemology. So we don't exclusively know things by reason or logic or observation. Although we do know things, we don't exclusively know things by those means. We know things because God has revealed things to us. Romans 1 talks about the ways God has revealed himself in general revelation. Everyone knows God exists and that he is requiring something of us. Some wind up as unbelievers because they suppress that truth and their hearts are darkened. So where presupp is superior to other forms of apologetics is that it denies the myth of neutrality. The myth of neutrality is that our knowledge and reason are neutral. Totally neutral and waiting for us to come along and just assess the facts as we see them. We approach everything with presuppositions, though, and a lot of Christians believe that they were utterly and entirely neutral to Christianity, and then they hit the books and they started studying to see if they could believe what it had to say. So for a long time, I believed I approached Christianity this exact way. I believed that at one point I was completely neutral, and I used neutral reason and logic to assess the claims of Christianity, and I discovered that they were in fact true. J. Warner Wallace has a very similar story. He was an atheist. He was a detective. He was an atheist. And in order to prove the gospel accounts wrong, he used his detective skills to examine them very intensely and found through inductive reasoning that they were true. That story blew me away when I was a kid, but now I realize he was a detective. His entire job was using logic and reason and things exclusively from a Christian worldview. So, of course, if your entire skill set is based on the Christian worldview and you actually start examining the Bible, you could end up believing what it says. If you're a good Calvinist, then you know that you're not even capable of belief until God opens your heart to believe. So you can't be neutral. You're either coming from the perspective of a regenerate or an unregenerate heart. I was previously coming from the perspective of an unregenerate heart, and after God changed my heart of stone to a heart of flesh, I'm now coming from the perspective of a regenerate heart. Where before I was suppressing the truth and unrighteousness, now I'm able to see the truth because he opened my heart to see it. In neither case was I ever truly neutral. Evidence is not going to sway someone from an unregenerate heart to a regenerate heart. Evidentialism, I referred to this apologetic method at the top of the show. Evidentialism is essentially an apologetic method that uses science and other things to prove Christianity. For example, they'll use ice layers to prove that the earth is only 6,000 years old, or there's lots of archaeological evidence for the flood. Or they'll use archaeological history of the preservation of the Bible to prove that it hasn't been corrupted. Now, all of those things are true, and they're good, but like Saiten Brugenkate says, there's always someone who knows more than you. So you might know your rock layers like nobody's business, and you can argue, but then instead of repenting and believing the gospel, that person you argued with goes home and Googles rock layers. So then someone who knows more about rock layers comes along and destroys your argument later. So what did you gain from any of that? I once heard someone talking about the AIDS virus and saying how it disproportionately harms people committing certain types of sins. They were saying it's a judgment from God against homosexuality, promiscuity, and drug abuse. And then they said, this is where it kind of went off the rails, they said that AIDS will never be cured because it's a judgment of God. Now, I'm not here to say one way or the other whether AIDS will ever be cured, but by that line of argumentation, if AIDS ever was cured, then that would have to mean Christianity isn't true, right? See, by that logic, I'm not saying that would be true at all. I'm just saying by the logic that person set up, AIDS being cured would be a proof against Christianity, or at least the claims you were making about Christianity prior. So that's the danger in putting all of your apologetic eggs into the wrong basket. You put all your eggs in the basket of your argument against evolution, and if one little thing about your argument is proven wrong, you've undermined your whole point. So best case scenario, you argue someone into believing in a vague monotheistic God, but we want them to believe in the Trinitarian God of the Bible, to repent and put their trust in Jesus. So there's a time and a place to talk about rock layers, but most of the time, if I'm talking about the gospel, I steer the conversation away from those things. So as this topic relates to the death of death, we should remember that death is presupposed to be a bad thing. There could be, you know, slight exceptions to that, like certain people might not see death as such a bad thing, but Jeff Durbin jokes that if atheism is true, then we're all just bags of stardust. Well, nobody acts like we're just bags of stardust when their mother dies. Death is almost exclusively viewed as a bad thing, unless it's a punishment for someone who inflicted it on someone else, and even then, death is the negative thing. So Jesus brought the cure for death. Jesus overthrew death. And he is the Lord of our reason and the Lord of truth. And that's the most important thing about this apologetic method, is that he is the Lord of our reason and the Lord of truth. And we're not going to know things or be able to argue for things apart from the ordered universe that he has set up. So a couple resources I want to bring your attention to. These will all be in the show notes. Also, I think there's a problem on some podcast apps where, like, you can't click links in the episode description, but everything is available on the website. So just go to deathofdeathpodcast.com/show notes to access those. Actually, I was setting up a redirect that was a little easier. Let me see if those are... Okay, that's still not ready. There should be an easier URL for that soon. I'll keep you updated on that. But you could also just go to the homepage, which is deathofdeath.net, and then get the show notes under the podcast tab. I'm going to tell you about them here, and then you can actually get the links on the website or in your podcast app if the links work. So one of the most popular books on this topic is Presuppositional Apologetics, Stated and Defended by Greg Bahnsen. I haven't read this book yet, but I ordered it, and I intend to go through it and then revisit the topic frequently on the show as I make my way through the book. I had a hard time finding it. I had to buy it used on Thrifty Books, so I can't give you an Amazon link to that one. I couldn't find it really anywhere for less than like $30 or $40, except for Thrifty Books. I found a used copy for $8, so try Thrifty Books. I think they might still have a couple of copies. Also, Greg Bahnsen had another book about Cornelius Van Til. Now, Cornelius Van Til is considered the inventor of presuppositional apologetics as a method. So his work is important, but, you know, when you get into the older books, they're a little harder to understand. So I guess Greg Bahnsen wrote a book about Cornelius Van Til's method. So if you wanted to get into Van Til, that's probably an easier place to start. I learned almost everything I know about this topic from Jeff Durbin, so I'm going to link to a YouTube playlist that they have on YouTube that has tons of videos of him explaining presuppositionalism. It's a really good resource. Also, another book I've never read, but I've always heard good things about, is Covenantal Apologetics by K. Scott Oliphant. With a title like that, how could you not love it, right? I've heard some controversy over Oliphant when it comes to theology proper, but he's well-respected as an apologist, so I'm not afraid to recommend that book, even though I haven't read it yet. Lastly, Sighten Brueckenkate is kind of a master at presuppositionalism, even though sometimes he can come off as kind of rude. He definitely can teach you the basics, and his website is proofthatgodexists.org. Best domain name ever. I'll be linking to all of that in the show notes. So in the most recent Elect Exclusive episode, I talked about 5 positive things about, you know, the thing. So here's a clip. You can have medical supplies delivered by drone in North Carolina now. In California, noise limitations don't apply if they inhibit the delivery of food or pharmaceuticals. So that doesn't really seem necessary, but there must be a good reason they did that. Maybe like if you're getting food delivered by like tank, the tank doesn't have to meet the noise levels of the city or something. I don't know. California generally extended tax deadlines and license renewals, including driver's licenses. We finally got free grocery bags back too. I think they're back to charging for them now, but for a while they were free again, so that was cool. I guess remote marriage is a thing there now too. I guess you can get married over Zoom. I'm reading over the list now a little. I guess in California, food trucks weren't allowed to operate at roadside rest areas. So that's done with now. They're allowed to be at rest areas. I had a brief moment of regret learning that that was ever a thing, but now it's gone. So that was a roller coaster. All right, if you want more of that and other exclusive episodes, as well as early access to this podcast, head over to patreon.com/deathofdeath and sign up for just $4 a month. I've been your host, Nick, here to tell you that God owns reason and logic, and if you're as committed to Christ's victory as I am, I'll be here to do it with you all again next week. Goodbye for now.